So welcome to the session. Our first speaker is Dr. Garrett Jones. Where'd he go? Oh, there you are. I'm just going to be very brief. He's a professor of biomedical ethics from New Zealand, coming from a very long way. So if you just really join me in welcoming him to share.
I'm actually a professor of anatomy with an interest in bioethics, but we'll forget about that. Now, the science-theology dialogue is dominated by issues in astrophysics, cosmology, evolution, and climate change. And you'll know that very well. And these are important, but probably with the exception of climate change, they lack the practical urgency which is encountered repeatedly in the medical area. Now, medical technologies affect our daily living, and they require daily decision-making. And this involves ordinary people and their families. Not only this, but medical technologies don't generally lend themselves to simple, black and white, right or wrong responses. So in this sense, it's impossible to be pro-biomedical technology or anti-biomedical technology, no matter what concerns might be raised by some of the technologies. Now, of course, these issues affect everyone, including Christians, because we are as dependent upon as others for our health and well-being upon medical technology. We are not immune. And so I think we have to confront a very important question. What implications does this have for Christian witness and for Christian theology? And I want to concentrate on just one case study. I could have concentrated on others, but I'll do just one, because I think it really is going to make a point. And I want to concentrate on cystic fibrosis. As I say, I think this highlights the points that I want to make. So first of all, a few things about cystic fibrosis, or CF. CF is caused by a recessive gene that manifests itself when both parents are carriers. About 1 in 25 people in the population are carriers. And when both parents are carriers, the chance of having a child with CF is 25%, so 1 in 4. It's caused by mutations in the gene which encodes the CF transmembrane contractance regulator protein, or CFTR protein for short. We don't need to know any details whatsoever about that, but that is just the one important point. It is a genetic abnormality. When this gene is either absent or its activity is reduced, then chloride and bicarbonate transport are both reduced. And the result is breakdown in the regulation of the components of sweat, digestive fluids, and mucus. The result is that a number of organs in the body become clogged with thick, sticky mucus. In the lungs, this can cause shortness of breath, a chronic cough, and repeated chest infections. And if that goes on for long enough and isn't controlled, you generally end up with a lung transplant. If the blockages affect the pancreas, this will reduce or stop enzymes from being released into the gastrointestinal tract, obviously required for the digestion of food, causing them problems with poor weight gain and malnutrition due to malabsorption. Round about 70,000 people have CF worldwide. There is no cure, and affected individuals have chronic ill health. Now, the thing is that over the past few decades, there has been very, very considerable progress in treatments. The treatments are aimed at reducing morbidity and increasing life expectancy. And the first drug was developed specifically for CF, and it received approval in 1993. Now, the genetic disorder was first discovered in 1938, and 80% of children born with CF at that time died before the age of one. By 1970, life expectancy was around 12. Today, the median life expectancy is in the late 30s or early 40s, although this varies considerably from one country to another, depending, of course, on the treatment that they do or don't receive. Affected individuals take numerous medications each day, including things like intensive antibiotic therapy and aerosols. And this occurs from as soon after birth as possible, which literally means within a day or so if you can, and they receive constant physiotherapy. They eat extra food and they exercise vigorously. As the individual with CF gets older, the disease advances, and so hospitalizations increase in frequency. And there'll generally be a hospitalization once a year, and as they get worse, it'll be more than that. A major thrust of therapy is to delay for as long as possible damage to the lungs. Now, approaches to CF take us into a world of vigorous research, as attempts are made to devise increasingly effective therapies. And as we've seen, they have certainly led to considerable increases in life expectancy, particularly over the past 20 years or so. These are aimed essentially at three things: at circumventing CF-related ion transport and doing this pharmacologically. Secondly, finding ways of correcting the basic defect in cells is what is known as this CF, as the chloride channel, and that's all that comes from problems with the CFTR conductance regulator. And thirdly, to use gene therapy to insert a normal copy of the GF gene of the CF gene into affected cells. Now, at the moment, there's considerable optimism about the prospect of gene replacement or gene editing therapies to correct some or all of mutations in CF. And recently, two CFTR modulator drugs, ivacaftor and lumacaftor, they've been approved for clinical use. The aim, of course, is to target the broken gene in patients with one of the many mutations that cause CF. Now, this is a very complex situation, and obviously I've just given it in a nutshell. Now, what I want to do for the rest of the time, though, is to ask a question. What if the parents want another child? Would they, and we're talking now about, say, Christian parents, would they regard another child with CF as a gift of God? Will their faith in the goodness of God be strong enough to support them? They would prefer not to have another child with this condition because the demands on them as a family are quite immense. It seems to me they have four options. Now, there are more options, but they themselves have various other ethical complications, and I don't want to go into them. So I just want to look then at four options. Option one, they can decide against having another child because they don't want to bring into the world another individual with a debilitating condition like CF. Option two, they could take a chance and proceed with the pregnancy as normal. As Christians, they might argue that the welfare of their next child is in God's hands, regardless of the outcome. Option three, they could again take a chance, knowing that they can have an abortion if the fetus, when tested at 9 to 10 weeks gestation, turns out to be affected. Or option four, they could use in vitro fertilization and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. If an embryo at the 4 or 8 cell stage does not have the CF gene, it'll be transferred to the woman in the normal way. On the other hand, if the CF gene is present in an embryo at that stage, the embryo will be discarded, and the same procedure will be carried out until an embryo lacking this gene is found. What then of these four options? It's fairly obvious, because of the nature of what we're dealing with, we will not find simple answers in the Bible, not in any simplistic form anyway. So what then do we make of some of these options? Option one, in deciding against having another child, this of course raises issues associated with self-inflicted childlessness. Is this an acknowledgement that God is in charge? Or are the parents taking too much control into their own hands? Option two, if they proceed with another pregnancy and they simply accept the outcome, it means they have a 1 in 4 chance of having another child with CF. This, of course, has many merits, but is it automatically the only or even the ideal way for Christians? Is, of course, no explicit scriptural warrant for undertaking it. Option three, to proceed with a pregnancy and have an abortion in the face of a positive diagnosis of CF. This, of course, will be the most problematic for most Christians on the grounds of its willingness to abort a fetus with CF, because that gives the appearance of being life-denying. But, of course, it needs to assess the interests of all involved. Option 4, very much the technological option, with its dependence upon IVF and PGD. Now, quite apart from any financial costs involved, it's invasive, and as we've seen, it involves the selection of embryos. One embryo will have to be chosen over another, and the immediate response of many Christians will be to reject this possibility because it relies upon choosing one embryo over another and inevitably destroying embryos. Let me then start commenting on these possibilities. The major take-home message, as far as I'm concerned, is that there is no simple solution. There is moral and theological ambiguity as the parents seek to find a way forward. This is regardless of which option they take. Or to put it another way, some form of compromise is inevitable. Will a child with CF be brought into the world? Will embryos be discarded? Will a fetus be aborted? Will the possibility of another child being born be forfeited? And where does God's will enter the equation? So, how much reliance then should be placed on scientific intervention? Integral to the scientific milieu in which we live are techniques like IVF and PGD. And their availability has to be taken into consideration in deciding how best God is glorified in specific situations like this one. So the question is, what resources do Christians possess to assist them in what is an invidious position? Well, I think that a start can be made by taking account of some biblically derived injunctions. Christians are to protect the defenseless and disenfranchised. They're to stress the importance of human flourishing, and it's fairly obvious that you can interpret those in different ways in this situation. They're to realize that their ultimate dependence is upon God, and also that human life isn't devoid of meaning simply because it is physically flawed. Alongside this, the parents will be reminded of the transformative power of the physical and the spiritual healing that Jesus brought, and that can be experienced today in the midst of Christian community. They'll also be grateful for the way in which human creativity manifested in medical achievements brings hope and new prospects in the midst of illness. After all, it is that which has transformed the life expectancy of these individuals. But of course, uncertainty and ambiguity are never far from the surface, and the limited nature of human powers should never be downplayed. Now, it seems to me that these considerations don't lead inevitably to any one knockdown conclusion, but they do form the framework within which decision-making should occur. And they need to be worked out in terms of what is in the best interests of the family as a whole, best interests of the existing child with CF, the best interests of any future children who may exist with or without CF, and, of course, the possibility of any embryos being destroyed. And I think the weight placed on each of these will depend on many factors, and the balance achieved between these conflicting interests should reflect the diverse relationships that exist that characterize the family itself, but more generally the church community and the human community. So what I am saying is there are no easy answers. If they go down the IVF-PGD route, they'll be agreeing to dispose of the affected embryos. Now, that's not inevitable, and they could decide it's a step too far. And that's perfectly acceptable, as long as they never think that ignorance is a virtue, and that somehow God's best will somehow eventuate, come what may. Thing is that technology makes certain things possible, as does genetic knowledge. God's best may be tied in with the genetic and other advances that are currently taking place. And a failure to take them seriously may amount to rejection of one of his blessings. So I think that a central control issue then is the degree to which we do or do not use the technology at our disposal. With technology comes control, and as we know, excessive control can be dangerous. On the other hand, that's not inevitable. After all, as I've said, individuals with CF have a far enhanced quality of life today compared with 20 or so years ago. And this is almost entirely on account of the technological skills and increasing scientific know-how. And so in terms of the options that I presented, I'd argue that the use of IVF-PGD shouldn't be viewed as out of bounds with a Christian believer. But this approach should be resorted to only when the parents have assured themselves that at the most fundamental level, they are in the end depending upon God, and that they are trusting him no matter what the eventual outcome. Now, what I'm calling for is far more emphasis to be placed on Christian character. Following Gushy and Starson in their book, Kingdom Ethics, I want to stress Christian ethics as practices, and I quote from them, not merely ideals and not only rules or principles that ought to be done, but practices that are actually and regularly done, embodied in action. See, in these terms, disciples of Jesus are to live humbly before God. They're to mourn what is wrong in themselves and the world. They're to surrender themselves to God. They're to hunger and thirst for God's delivering justice. And they're to offer compassionate action, forgiveness, healing, and steadfastness to those in need. And so as we seek to retain our distinctiveness as Christ's followers, we're to engage with the world with a pastoral and transforming presence. We're to seek to be peacemakers and to treat all with respect. So as our characters are transformed by the living presence of Christ, we will love our enemies. We will also love those with whom we disagree on ethical decisions. We will seek to uphold those facing appallingly difficult decisions and living daily with massive burdens of care. The relevance of these kingdom characteristics, I think, should shine through when facing the dilemmas brought to light by CF and faced with the prospect of looking after a second child with this debilitating condition. The challenge applies equally for the parents and for the Christian community around them. The response should never be that of one Christian community where, faced with a second child with CF and living in a new country, the mother had very, very reluctantly had an abortion. The result was rejection by many in the church, her removal from all church responsibilities, and attempts to have her sacked from her role with the aid agency for which she worked. Ultimately, her family left the church. And even those in leadership in the church who'd supported her were removed from their church leadership positions. Now, recounting this very sad episode isn't meant to justify the decision in that instance, but it does demonstrate the challenges of working out our Christian character. The complexity of medical decision-making at the interface of technology and faith takes us into murky territory, where simple black and white answers may be profoundly misleading. The process of balancing compassion with healing, making peace with understanding, living humbly while still mourning at our proclivities to evil, this all takes us to the heart of Christian character. As Christians express some of their thinking in theological terms, they'll be reminded that all life is a gift from God and is to be enhanced as far as we're able, and that our aim is to value all human beings as far as we can, whatever genetic aberrations they may display. We are more than our genes, even recognizing they are crucial to what we are. But at the same time, we are to reject any notion of perfectionism, and we are to be realistic about the extent of our control over biological processes, because this is always partial and time-limited. We are not gods, and we must never act as though we were God. So I think we are to acknowledge the provisional nature of what can be accomplished by humans in the form of the medical profession, but never downgrading this. We've been created as relational beings so that the support provided or not provided by the community in the form of the extended family and the church community is integral to decision making. And ultimately, in the realization that we are fallible and that our knowledge, that knowledge is both medical and theological, is imperfect, it's vital that we depend upon the Holy Spirit for direction and assistance when faced with the sort of dilemmas to which I have been alluding. And so, science, ethics, and God's will. In seeking God's will, we have to adopt, seems to be, a multidimensional approach. We have to pay attention to the science involved, because all technology is scientifically driven. And this provides the context within which to consider the ethical issues with their rules, principles, and virtues. But I think, as we've seen, these tend to be theoretical. They don't of necessity conform to scriptural precepts and the priorities enunciated by Jesus. I think the practical outworking of our thinking is provided by one's character and one's relationship to God. We're to be people of integrity and honesty, who always deal with others with transparency and professionalism. As individuals and as communities, we're always to ask what direction is the way for us as we take account of the people involved, both present and, in this instance, future. We come face to face with God, realizing that our decisions will, on occasion, be less assured than we would like as we struggle to come to terms with the many facets of very highly complex situations. Now, I've devoted my time to one very real cause and case. What we need to remember is that the demands will increase as we move into the burgeoning domain, and we'll hear more about this tomorrow, opened by CRISPR-Cas9-based genome editing. And then there is NIPT, non-invasive prenatal testing, very much with us at the moment and increasing all the time. And, of course, whole genome sequencing, with its potential to make available a vast array of genetic information early in pregnancy. In all these, Christian character will come to the fore if we are to cope with the challenges of scientific advance in the medical area, and if we are to be in a position to use it to contribute to Christian well-being, rather than as developments to be fought against and complained about. And so finally, there may be no easy answers, and our value systems may be pushed to the limit. All Christians, whether medical professions or patients, they will not reach the same conclusions, but we are never promised that that would be the case. Treatment and advice will not be self-evident, neither are they given. When this is the case, we are to support one another and not to condemn any Christian who has arrived at a different point in their decision-making. The support we provide to others faced with taxing dilemmas has far more of a Christian base than any judgments we pass on their standing as people of faith. As I'm supposed to do, some references at the end, so thank you very much.
So just a couple of questions. Thank you, Dr. Jones, for your talk. It seems to me there's even another dilemma coming along with cystic fibrosis, is if these people now live to 30 years old, are cystic fibrosis plagued people able to reproduce? Does it lead to reproductive problems? You could ask the same series battery of questions about, should I, as a treated cystic fibrosis patient, have children, knowing that I'm going to pass genes, to my children?
Their chances of passing on a CF gene are perhaps exactly the same as yours, or anyone else's. We don't know. We would know that, obviously, they had the gene, but numerous other people who we don't know nothing about are carriers. And the thing is, you've got to ask whether or not they'll be fertile, and this would be variable. But if they are, there's very much, the high chance is that many of us in this room are probably, or could be, carriers. We have no idea that we are.
Right, and so the problem is,
if you marry someone who doesn't have the disease,
right.
They don't have, sure, right. You might say they should be genetically tested. So I'm saying that the problems may not be quite as great as you think they could be.
So, excellent talk, I really appreciate it, because it gets to some of the key questions we deal with in medicine. But my question is there anything distinctly Christian about this approach? Like, what do you think really comes to bear that we as Christians are offering to this or could offer to this that we couldn't get from a different source?
Well, as I say, I think it comes down to the character. I think if you deal with ethical issues, you're sure many of the ethical issues and principles that Christians would use and others would use will be the same.
Yeah. But Christians talk about character, right?
Oh. Yeah. In many ways, of course, if other people are going to deal with some of these issues in the same way, that's fine.
So you're saying there's nothing that's actually distinctly Christian then?
Well, is it distinctly Christian in any ethical decision making, anywhere, medicine or otherwise? I think what you've got here is how someone approaches it, the sort of support they do or don't get, which they should get support from the Christian community, where they always do, of course, is another matter. So, but like many things, the way in which we act, the decisions we make, many of them are not specifically Christian. Doesn't mean to say that they're not in accordance with the sort of Christian direction, the direction of Jesus.
I just really want to hop off that because I think that's really important. So, put it more pointedly, the way you describe is basically what this is called virtue ethics, right? Applying virtue ethics to decisions. But I'm a little confused about how it relates to science, right? Because any decision, any ethical decision can have people that disagree. Any ethical decision that even that doesn't involve science is going to have disagreement and tough choices. So, how does this bear specifically in regards to science? I mean, obviously, BGD, but I'm looking for broader controversy because I'm just thinking, well, this is virtue ethics applied to this, but you know, I'm failing to see the connection between, you know, how the science makes any difference.
Well, how much you utilize, are prepared to utilize the science and the technology available. That's what I think it comes down to. I mean, many Christians, I think, would be somewhat concerned about some of the science here, and particularly the IVF-PGD area. But what I'm saying is they are doing that for other reasons, because of their value they place on the embryo. What I am saying, as much as anything, is this is not just something which is decision-making confined to the particular individual couple or individual family. This is something which is very much a decision of the whole Christian community within which they are functioning. And I think that is a very important part of the way forward in this sort of condition and numerous other conditions which are coming.
So we're going to have to move on to the next person, but thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Dr.